Listen to those pipes. Best singer in rock. Listen to this. See, it's, there's just something about that. There's something right there, Sebastian Bach of the band Skid Row. I'm Justin Kaufman. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm just, say it again, Pete Zimmerman with me here, Rob Martier. Coming up, we're going to talk with the Neo-Futurists, some current and past alumni, about the shocking news that Too Much Light Makes a Baby Go Blind no longer be performed at the Neo-Futurarium starting in 2017 over licensing. You hate to see that. Like I said, right before the news is that for the show tonight, I'm very excited that we booked the lead singer of Skid Row, Sebastian Bach, the bad boy of rock and roll, to be on the program tonight because he has a new memoir. And the new memoir, he was going to be at a bookstore this weekend in the Chicago area. So we worked it out, and they were like, well, can we tape, you know, can we do this, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then I started reading it, you know, and like I was calling around to different places to get the book and started, you know, just doing like a 24-7 kind of, because we had another book. I forgot what book we had. This is how fast they go. But I had a book, an author in maybe on Monday, and it was a long book. It was like trying to get the whole thing done, or maybe it's Friday. Maybe it was Friday. And so I just started going into this book. I just spent like, 6 hours during the day, and then I'd come to work. So I just had Skid Row on the brain. And, of course, you know, he canceled earlier in the week, and then we're going to do it tonight. And then right before the show, we got the call that was like, yeah, he can't do it. Personal emergency. So, and most of the time I would never do this. Most of the time, and you know this, I mean, it's, and it rarely does happen, surprisingly. But we would just book something else. But I just invested 2.5 days in a Skid Row. And I don't know about you guys, but that's like, in real life, that's like 10 weeks. This is a lot of time to put
into
Skid Row.
That's a lot of Skid Row.
And, you know, and I know how the game works, you know, and I totally believe him. It's a personal emergency, but he's coming in.
Yeah, I hope he's okay.
Yeah, but he's coming in to do this book signing this weekend. So, you know, he's not going to offer up an interview to promote a non-existent event, right? So the way it works most of the time is they want to peg to some sort of event, especially if someone who doesn't live in Chicago. And then they come through, and we are able to get a couple minutes to talk. So we didn't get it. But I was like, well, I read the book. I mean, I'm almost like a Skid Row expert now. It's really interesting. I mean, it is interesting because he's a kid. There's a couple things that came out of this book. If you're familiar, Skid Row was a heavy metal sort of hard rock band from the late 80s. They kind of burst on the scene with a song called 18 in Life, Youth Gone Wild, I Remember You. They were huge on Dial MTV in the late 80s. If you remember the show Dial MTV with Adam Curry, I think it was Adam Curry. It was essentially what became Total Request Live. But it was this idea of a countdown that people could call up and, you know, they would do a top 10 countdown. And at that time on MTV, it was all dominated by hair bands. So it would be Poison or Def Leppard or Aerosmith or Guns N' Roses or Skid Row. And they, when their 18 in Life video came out, it was just number one every night or every day at 5 o'clock after school. I remember being in grade school, I think, at the time, and you would come home and rush to watch MTV, and it would be 18 in Life would be the number one. And, you know, he talks a lot about that time. He also talks about his relationship, which is really interesting to me, his relationship with, you know, sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Mostly the drugs part. I mean, he doesn't, he's if you remember Sebastian Bach, he's like a 6'4" pretty boy.
And that, right.
He gets in a lot of fights because people would say that, because he had that long hair and he almost
very
looked like
lush.
A woman.
Yeah.
And he didn't have the sort of, he didn't have very hard chiseled features. He was very
soft.
And it would get him in trouble because people would, he's living that lifestyle and people would come up and, you know, sort of put him down for it. And the way he would lash out would just to be sort of swing at people. And he'd just get in all these fights. The book is peppered with, I got in a fight and I went to jail. It's like there's no real consequence to the book. It's not like the book is, and that's why I want to talk to him about it. It's not like a, if you do this, you know, this is the consequence of your life. You know, he says a lot in the book, I was living my dreams, but I was also living a nightmare. And, you know, you can tell by the drug abuse and alcoholism is rampant. I mean, he sort of paints a picture of his life with a microphone in one and a bottle of Jack Daniels in the other.
Yeah, and he's not saying, though, you know, if you do this like I did, boy, you're going to mess up your life.
He actually has a whole chapter in here, which I want to talk about the term rock star being thrown around. You know, because people will say, what a rock star when, you know, Jimmy Butler makes a three-pointer. He's like, you know, what a rock star basketball player. What a rock star dentist. I think that's a joke he makes, you know, like people living a rock, like being called rock stars when they're not. And there's a big part of being a rock star is truly being a rock star, being authentic. And he talks about the really can't, that bugs him that he was truly, you know, of that sort of rock star mentality and all these other people are posers.
There are very few rock stars, genuine rock stars. Right.
He's one of them. I mean, I really, whatever you think of the music, I realized listening, I was like, I don't remember being that big of a Skid Row fan. And I think that's why I chose tonight to talk about it, even though he blew us off. Because, you know, I spent a lot of time on something that I wasn't necessarily passionate about. It's not like it was joyful reading. And I don't know, knock on the book. But it wasn't like I was like, oh, man, I can't wait to read about my favorite band, Skid Row. You know, I'm interested in the guy because he was they kind of touch on this in the book, too. He was a bad boy, meaning that was what they marketed him as. Like, you don't want to get too close to your daughter. This guy's got, you know, one thing on his mind, and it's hard rocking. Yeah! And he lived up to it, and he kind of talks about this strange dichotomy or I guess, contrast. Of that's not who he was, but that's how he was marketed. So he almost plays to the role.
So as a character, he's essentially playing.
Yeah, I mean, to the extent that, you know, he lived his life that way. But he was there's something to be said. He has this whole thought about life imitates art, that more often than not, he found himself actually the things he was singing about or, you know, as he talked about in Broadway, he was in Jekyll and Hyde. A lot of the words that he said almost always came true and vice versa. Like the things that he did became art later. And that's something that he just always felt was really spooky. That's how he kind of writes about it. So, and then there's what we'll do is we'll take a quick break. We'll come back and I'll read a passage because he talks about Alpine Valley in Chicago. I had a lot to talk to
him
about.
Skiing? Was he skiing?
It was not skiing. Here's what I had on my notes. You like this, Pete. This is what I had. Musical influences, Kiss. He met the band, or his dad took him to see Kiss. That's what got him started.
That's a good influence.
And it's also shared, meaning, you know, you hear that story, and he relays the story that's similar to a lot of those guys from the time in the late 80s, the guys who were fronting bands like Poison, Guns N' Roses. They were all, like, influenced by Kiss. Art imitates life. Alpine Valley.
Also wears makeup.
He also wears makeup, that's right. His time on Broadway, which I think was a strange time. His bad boy stuff, the authenticity, and then his voice technique. Because I do think that truly he was one of the more pure kind of rock and roll singers. He had that do that. And, you know, there were some times in his career where he blew out his voice and, you know, he was working on records, things like that. So that's what I was going to talk to him about. So we'll take a break and I'll read a passage from the book. And if you have any questions about from the unofficial biographer, me, who just read Sebastian Bach's book. All right, so essentially, as I say with the carryout, I read the news. I read Sebastian Bach's book, so you don't have to. And I did. I did it over 2 days' time. I can tell you anything you need to know. 312-981-7200. Listen to that right there. Little Skid Row here on the Download 720 WGN. We're playing because Sebastian Bach was supposed to be our guest tonight, and the longtime singer, Broadway star, and now author had a personal emergency and canceled tonight. He's going to be in Chicago this weekend for book signing. So I kind of know the only reason we didn't reschedule and not talk about it is we kind of know the writing's on the wall that we're not going to get a chance to talk to Sebastian Bach, which is a bummer because I just read 390 pages of stories. 630 says, saw him in Alpine Valley. Headliner was Bon Jovi. It was awesome. There's a lot about that tour in this book. You would like it, including the last show of the tour where John Bon Jovi and Sebastian Bach get into a big fight, and John Bon Jovi's dad allegedly chokes Sebastian Bach against the wall. A lot of Sebastian Bach's stories end up with him getting shoved up against a wall and someone going, I don't know what to do with you. Here's how he starts the book. He's got a sultry look on the cover of this book, but it says, Youth Gone Wild. This is the prologue. I touch my fingers to my lips. I stand, bathed in sweat, in the center of the stage. The taste is salty to the tongue. I look at the ground. I see a glass bottle under my gaze, lying askew atop the metal grid. I feel the red liquid all over my hand. I touch the crimson substance to my mouth. I wipe my brow. I discover that my face is completely covered in what I'm assuming is tomato juice. To my shock, horror, and amazement, my face is not covered in tomato juice. My face is completely covered in my own blood. In front of 20,000 people, opening for my heroes, Aerosmith. I see red. Not from the blood in my eyes, but from the anger in my heart. General admission crowds are they're by nature, they're crazy. When there are no chairs at a concert and thousands of people crush into one sweaty, rocking crowd, things can get out of control all too easily. I look into the seething mass of highly charged rock and rollers on the arena floor in front of me. I start to utter the infamous rap, as viewed millions of times now on YouTube. About 10 guys circle one guy. They're all pointing at him. They're all shouting at me. It was him! It was him! Was it you? Expletive. The man in the middle, he says nothing. He looks straight at me and extends his middle finger. A gesture commonly known as the middle finger. What happens next is the first chink in the armor of Skid Row, of stardom. This is the exact moment when my childhood dream shows the first sign of an adult nightmare. I had spent 7 or 8 years previous to this moment playing in clubs, bars, saloons, playing three sets a night, cover tunes, to drunk rock and rollers in Quebec and Northern Ontario. Fighting was just part of the scene that I had been in for years now. I did not know any way to respond. But this was not a club. This was a packed arena. Anyway, three more pages of how this was the infamous where he jumped in and he punched and he kicked a guy right in the face and he threw a bottle back and he broke somebody's nose. He was arrested and thrown in jail, blah, blah, blah. There's six pages more of this. Then he says, as I thought of the bottle crushing into a fan's face thrown by me, I hung my bloody head in shame in the back of a police car and wept. All I ever wanted to do was entertain people with music, with singing, with my voice. I have never in my life ever tried to be a, quote, bad boy. All I ever tried to be is good. The doors on my jail cell clinked shut that night with a resounding thud. I sat in my cell and pondered the severity of my actions, the irony of my circumstance. We are the youth gone wild, indeed, but at what cost? Guitar solo. So it's a lot of stories like that. Sort of punctuated with drug use, Jack Daniels, and hanging out with Guns N' Roses. That's essentially it. 350 pages of, then I was hanging out with Axl Rose. Then I was hanging out with Vince Neil. Then I was hanging out with the guys from Aerosmith. Like, it's just like that. They were mad at me. They were mad at me. It's a common refrain. Yes, they don't like me anymore. So Sebastian Bach with his new memoir. We didn't get a chance to talk to him tonight, but It's worth a read. I don't think you should power read it the way I did it for I really, truly, Pete, and you know this because I've been bothering you about it. I like had to set a timer essentially, be like, I need to get through this because we're interviewing Sebastian Bach and I want to do it right. And I read 380 pages in 2 days. And I now consider myself an expert, an unauthorized biographer of the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Sebastian Bach.